Right, so tell me who you are, what you do, and why you got into doing what you're doing.
Okay, hi. Thanks for having me here, Oliver. So I'm Dr. Connie McReynolds, and I'm the author of the best-selling book on Amazon called Solving the ADHD Riddle. I'm a licensed psychologist. I've been in the field for 30 some years, and my background is really rehabilitation psychology. And so part of that has been about uncovering pathways to help people live a better life. And that really is what the foundation is of the work I've been doing for most of my career, but particularly within the last 15 years, which has been focused on helping children and adults who have ADHD and a host of other conditions be able to resolve some of those symptoms and go on and have a better life.
So you'll be interested to know that when I was 12 years old, I was diagnosed with Tourette's, ADHD, OCD, the whole package. I was on medication called Risperdal that was later changed to Risperdone or vice versa. And at 21, I learned something called The Secret, Law of Attraction, Energy, and I decided to come off my medication cold turkey overnight, and I learned to meditate. And all of a sudden, my Tourette symptoms, twitching and swearing, disappeared. And my OCD disappeared, my anxiety disappeared, depression disappeared, insomnia. It used to take me 3 hours to get to sleep every night, just excessive thinking. I was all over the place, ADHD, monkey up a tree, just running everywhere. And all of a sudden, in that 3 weeks of me profusely sweating out the medicine that was in me, having delusions that people would have said I had, Tourette's disappeared. There was nothing. I had no thoughts. Because it was a medication that was slowing my brain down to stop the twitching. So it seems like it's working, but you wake up the next day before you take a tablet, all these thoughts come back in your brain. And then obviously you twitch because you're trying to work out everything. So you take a tablet, slows the brain down, twitching stops, tablet works. But all these thoughts are just in my head building up, building up, building up. Why are we here? Is there a God? Why do we go to school? Why is there laws? Who says we should follow the laws? And then eventually, when I came off the medication, I basically had the brain power of the whole world to work out everything. And then by working out everything, there was no thoughts. And meditation simply slowed my brain down enough to stop new thoughts coming in. That's how I healed Tourette. So I'm very interested to know your stories with people who have essentially had ADHD, got ADHD, and have reversed it, and methods that you've used with them.
Well, essentially, I think what you're talking about is the whole concept of neuroplasticity, which is really being able to change our brain. So, using techniques and approaches that help us just change up patterning that doesn't work, change up the neural pathways, strengthen the weaker areas. And so, that's the foundation for most change, if not all change that we ever incur, is that we really have to use a systematic approach to kind of get there. Yeah, the challenge is for most people, they're not consistent enough with that when they have other challenges going on in their life. And so the work I do helps to kind of condense down that, similar to what you did, but they're coming in and we're using an organized approach based on an assessment that helps me identify auditory and visual processing problems, regardless of the diagnostic label that they walk in the door with. And so what I have found in about 8 out of 10 people is that these auditory and visual processing problems are an underlying causal root for a lot of the conditions and the symptoms and the behaviors that they're experiencing, the challenges in life. It can add to anxiety, depression, it can add to chronic pain problems, it certainly adds to learning difficulties for children and adults. And simply by figuring out what this is, so the assessment that I use is evidence-based, it's computer-based, it takes about 20 minutes to get there, and then we're able to really target in on those areas that need to be strengthened. And so through EEG biofeedback, which is just an organized method of helping a person learn how to train their brain in the desired outcome, then through that repetition and that training, we're able to affect that change. Pardon me. And when the change gets hardwired in, so to speak, then it tends to hold. And that's the beauty of the brain and the neuroplasticity of our brain.
So you said EEG, right? The EEG, well, explain a bit more about that. The EEG, whatever you said.
So EEG biofeedback is electroencephalogram. It's a big word. It's EEG, and it doesn't administer anything to the brain, which is what is so important here. So it's very similar to people who go in and get an EKG, where they'll have a little sensor and it's attached, and they're trying to monitor a body function. This is monitoring brain functions. It's very similar to biofeedback, which is the biological feedback that we get if we use a sensor to measure our pulse rate, our respiration. And by being able to see or better understand how our body or our mind is organized and reacting to the environment, we can then affect change through that feedback system. So it's nearly instantaneous. And that's the beauty of this, is that when we're using these little sensors, there's, again, nothing that goes to the brain. It's simply reading brainwaves, and a person is able to literally run the computer with their brainwaves. And so children and adults typically find that pretty fascinating that they can do that. It's also very empowering for children and adults who maybe haven't felt so empowered. Maybe they felt overpowered by some of their symptoms or overpowered by the situations that have come at them in life, and just haven't felt like they can navigate things very well. And so this really helps on many levels, because we're empowering people to take charge of their life, empowering them to have a better functioning brain system. Most of it is there. It's just getting it organized and getting it set up so that people can better use the gifts that they already have.
So when you say they can use their brain to function the computer, are you referring to the brain as the computer, or an actual like computer that their electromagnetic waves can control certain things?
So the sensor is fed into an actual computer, and an algorithm runs in the background through the software system. So the sensor is actually measuring brainwaves the same way as a sensor measures a pulse or a heart rate. So those are just sensors. It's just reading the information, feeds it into the computer, runs the algorithm. And with the scientifically designed low impact training programs that look a little bit like video games, people have a training plan based on their needs. And by using this feedback system, they're able to get the feedback. Oh, am I attending? Oh, am I under stress? A lot of times people have stress and don't think they do. This measures it, it reflects back to them. So they have a better understanding of really what's happening internal to them. And through that feedback, they are able to then affect change in the way their brain works. And through the repetition of learning, then the brain becomes stronger in these areas that are designed to get stronger.
So is it like Elon Musk with his Neuralink, where he's trying to create a device where whatever you're thinking, the program can basically, you can basically think of a sentence and then the thing he's creating will write the sentence. Is it similar to that?
No, it is not.
No.
No, he's using AI. This is not.
Okay. So this, your thing, you can see like how it's changing the, you call it the neuroplasticity cells. You can literally reprogram your brain cells. So when I was younger, the more I used to think, the more I would think. So I'd create all these neurons that just go ballistic. And then by slowing them down, I basically just cut the power to all of them. And then I literally did reprogram my brain. So your thing allows people to show themselves that they can reprogram the brain and see it in front of them on a screen to know that, okay, it's, there's proof externally that I can actually change my brain permanently.
That is the beauty of the neurofeedback process, because when we're reading the brain waves, that's fed into the computer system. And so as they are operating their training programs, what they're able to see is that they get better, the programs will ramp up in difficulty. So they're able to notice. And then we also are looking for transferability of that into their life. So we're looking for evidence within their daily life that things are getting better. Parents and teachers report differences and improvements in their behaviors and their ability to attend, to learn. Children have less behavioral outbursts and behavioral intervention needs because they're not struggling against this auditory and visual processing challenge that limits their ability to effectively interact in their life. If a child can't remember what's being said, that's a memory, it's a processing problem, it isn't willful bad behavior. And so the real important aspect of this for teachers and adults and parents is that if you can identify that your child has this, and in my book chapters, I have checklists after the auditory chapter and after the visual chapter, so that parents and teachers can perhaps identify where is this child positioned? Does this child have auditory processing? If so, here are some techniques and some approaches that may be more effective. Because if a child can't remember what's being said, this is not willful bad behavior. This is simply this child can't remember. And so we need alternative ways of teaching and communicating with children who have that. If it's a visual processing problem, which can look like messy handwriting, it can look like disorganization, it can look like a whole host of things. Maybe it's poor eye-hand coordination. Maybe they bump into things. Maybe they knock things over. There's a whole host of that that can go on. And maybe this child can't get the material from the whiteboard down to a piece of paper without losing some of the information, without losing letters or words and sentences. And so this is not a child who's geared toward visual learning. This may be a child more geared toward auditory learning. And so part of the challenge here is being able to understand where this child is. And so the label of ADHD really may get someone in the door for some services, but it doesn't do much to tell us really what this child needs. We have to really peel all of that back and get underneath what these labels are and really find out what is the root cause of this child's struggle to learn. And this applies equally to adults. So many adults have this. They don't know what it is. Some can describe it. Some think that they actually work much harder than their peers to get ahead. I've worked with adults who've lost many jobs over their career because they have said, I can't remember what my boss is saying to me. And they get really frustrated with me. And then I eventually get fired. Well, when I do this assessment and we understand then that there are auditory processing problems, so the auditory memory is weak. So what we want to do is strengthen that through these training programs, and we track it. And so the good news is we have the data to be able to show this. And then we're also looking at how's it going in your life. We want all of those pieces of information to really kind of confirm how is this translating into a person's life? Are we seeing improvements? And over the 15 years I've been doing this, it has just been remarkable. People who have trauma, PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder, children who've come through foster care, children who've had other kinds of horrible situations, and adults, the brain gets hardwired for trauma. And so the challenge with that is it's very difficult to overcome that part of the brain, which is the amygdala system, to be able to rewire that. It's so difficult for people to be able to fully be aware of when they're getting triggered and then be able to implement some other type of intervention to stop that. With the neurofeedback, it is such a kind of a shortcut, if you will, to be able to cool that part of the brain down so that the trauma isn't running that person's life. What we want to do is give that person back their life so that they're not feeling like they're just at the mercy of whatever is coming at them. So this is the beauty of the neurofeedback, is that by retraining the brain, training these neuronal pathways in the brain, getting that reinforced, which is how the brain has learned everything, is through repetition. So our brain learns through repetition. And when we are able to wire in, so to speak, different kinds of pathways and strengthen that over time, those pathways tend to hold, as you have uncovered. They tend to hold. And so the more we use that, the stronger they get, and the stronger they get, the more we use them. So that becomes a more positive outcome versus those negative situations that people get caught up in, like trauma, learning problems, anxiety, depression, chronic pain, and the like.
I remember being at school, right? I was the only kid who didn't understand anything. The teacher would teach. After, say, 10 words, my brain would then have to relay the 10 words in my own way. And then she'd mention another 30 words and I'm trying to catch up. And so then I'd be like trying to catch up to like set to the number 20th word, and she's finished the whole sentence and I've no idea what she said. So rather than tracking in real time, my own voice is trying to commentate it to the point where I'm like, I don't know where she is now. So I would just start thinking about what's for dinner, just how can I make money tomorrow? I'm going to go out for my bike afterwards. And I wouldn't understand anything. And no matter how many times a teacher would explain, give me one-on-one time, I wouldn't get it. And that's because I needed to process it in my own language. So I'd need you to say what you've just said, and I'd have to reaffirm back. So basically what you mean is this, 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 and this. I'd need you to say yes or no. You couldn't then just reword it in your own way, because I need you to confirm the language in my way. And teachers didn't have time for that, okay? I had to basically take everything in Chinese, translate it back to Indian, and you just say, yes, that's it. No one could do that. But you're right. I still can't write. I couldn't write. I couldn't hold a pen. My hand aches. My letters will go up. Now I don't even, but I can't write. And when I do write, it's capital letters because it's just easier to do capitals. But yeah, so I couldn't remember anything. My memory is terrible. And then I had my awakening, and I remember going back in my past of maths and English that I couldn't do. And I forced myself to be able to spell words that I couldn't spell because I put it down to being dyslexic, ADHD, Tourette's, whatever, right? I almost like I program my brain to accept that I can't spell, I can't remember because of these conditions. I couldn't work out maths. And I started to do all these mathematic equations just in seconds. And I literally reprogram my brain to learn spellings of stuff and to do maths equations. So I did reverse my brain after understanding that. I programmed my brain to be like this and accepted it. And as people do, they accept it when they're a kid, they've got ADHD, dyslexic, and they go through jobs in adult life. Why did you forget? Oh, I've got ADHD, boss, and they're 40 years old. Oh, okay, then that's fine. And they don't realize that they can reverse it. So it's very interesting how the way that you're reversing it is with these, external systems where you can see it, whereas the method I used was simply just telling myself, nope, this is nonsense what I've just learned. I'm going to flip it. I don't want to be like this. I want to be the opposite. And I kept training my brain to essentially remember these spellings until I remembered the spellings, almost like a drama school person remembering lines. The more you get your brain to remembering lines, the more you do it. And it takes a long time. I also remember at that time to prove my theory right. I've never been dyslexic, but my spelling's been shit. My language has been crap. I wanted to be dyslexic like Richard Branson. So I programmed myself to really, really not be able to spell and write just to prove that you can train your brain to do anything. And then I flipped it where I could learn any spelling and I got really good at it. And obviously, I haven't done that in ages. My brain hasn't practiced these words. So my spelling's a bit crap. And with iPhones doing auto check, doesn't really help. Back in the day, 10 years ago, there wasn't really much, auto check. But I just love the fact that you literally can reprogram your brain to do anything. If for adults, what would you do with adults if somebody came to you and said, I've got ADHD. The doctor says I should be taking Ritalin, but I don't really want to do it. My memory is absolutely shit. Help me. What would you say?
We would schedule an initial intake because the assessment that we do in about 20 minutes will help identify those areas that are problematic. And then what we do is develop the unique training plan. It's 30 minutes twice a week. We do 10 hours of that training and then we reassess. Most people need about 40 sessions, which is 20 hours, kind of the industry standard. Some people get done quicker, some people need longer. It depends on how far they need to go to be able to get that strengthened. And every brain is unique in how it responds to the timeline of the neurofeedback. But the beauty is, with consistency, these programs we've shown can work, can really make a difference in someone's life. Doesn't mean anything about the age. I've worked with people as young as 3, and I have people of 93 who are doing the neurofeedback. Now, the older generation are doing it to enhance their cognitive functioning, keep their memory, bring back some of the functioning that maybe has declined a bit. We don't have to go into a state of decline as we age. We can hang on to our faculties, and there's ways to do that. So a lot of senior citizens have chosen to start moving into this as well, and I've actually put a neurofeedback station inside a retirement center. So it's amazing what we can do through just a programmed, organized approach, and then people go on and do well in their life. They don't have to keep coming back because that neuroplasticity and the learning within the brain gets it wired in. And so that's what we want. We want it wired in so people can go on and have a great life.
So I'm interested to know your perspective on this. So I don't believe these conditions like ADHD, Tourette's, OCD are genetic, right? What I do believe is that the patterns that your parents were doing, which made their brain a certain way, simply gets passed down energetically. So if I've got really high energy and I'm picking up everyone else's thoughts, then my brain's going to be very active and stimulated, and the neurons are going to be firing up with all these thoughts, right? And so I've got the same energy. My child would have the same energy as me. He's going to be tuning into the same stuff, thinking the same things. Secondly, to that, if the neurons in me, for example, from all my thinking, will they get passed down to my child? And if I was to reprogram my brain, so if I didn't have my awakening and change everything, would my son, or child have the same brain as I had when I was 21 with my Tourette's chaos brain versus now I've done the work, will he not? So basically, it's not genetic. What is genetic is the patterns come down. If you've got somebody who eats loads of unhealthy foods and they have a child, their child's going to see that the parent's eating loads of unhealthy foods. What's your thoughts on these being genetic? Because some people say it is. I don't think it is. Again, the patterns which create these symptoms, I think, create the same patterns unless you change them, basically.
Well, it's kind of the age-old question. It comes down to nature versus nurture. Yeah. So it's the biology versus the environment. And I don't know that we can necessarily pull it all apart because it's integrated. And so there is biology, there is environment. Mm. And being able to say it's one or the other is pretty hard to do because you probably have a little bit of both going on. There's a whole field of epigenetics that Dr. Bruce Lipton has been writing about for decades. And you know, the good news about that is he says we are not a slave to our genetic predisposition. So we do know that we are able to influence, and that's good news. Now, are there familial patterns that I've seen? Absolutely. You know, we can see it going back. But again, there really isn't any way to pull those two apart. You can't really pull the nature and the nurture apart because they've all been integrated into this person's life. And so from my standpoint, it doesn't really matter too much to me which way it has come from, because we're just dealing with today. We're being in the present moment. We're looking at, okay, where is this adult? Where is this child? What are the areas that are weaker? What can we do to perhaps strengthen that? What can we do to assist and help this person meet their goals? And I'd much rather focus on that and just leave this other debate to the scientists and whomever else wants to have that debate, because that's not my role to try and pull that apart. My role is really, where are you today? What is working today? What isn't working today? What can we do with this assessment? Can we identify some areas that could be a root cause for this? And by root cause, I'm not going back to the nature or the nurture discussion. I'm simply saying, how is the brain working today? And if we can identify these auditory and these visual processing problems that are affecting memory, conceptualization, and sequencing, then we can help this person make progress in their life. And that's what my work is about, is really helping people achieve those goals that they want to hold for themselves and to live to their potential. When these situations are in the way, they're kind of like speed bumps, and sometimes they're barriers for some children because they can't get past what this is to be able to learn well. And if you can't really learn well and you can't figure out how to comprehend the world around you, you live in a little bit of an isolation tunnel, and that's pretty hard for children. They also get into a comparison of noting how they are against their peers, and a lot of negative self-talk can come into play, and we want to stop that because none of that's very helpful at all. And it really just demeans the person internally. It brings them down, and we don't need that. We need people living their best life. We need people who are able to contribute to the world in the way that they're here to do. Everyone has something to contribute. And if you've got a blockade in front of you of being able to do that, and there's something we can do to help that, then let's get this happening. Let's get it figured out so that people can do the best that they can do.
When you mentioned the thing about the auditory part, where when you're listening, your brain's just not absorbing it. Why do people get into that, your opinion? Why do people's brains get into that state in the first place where they simply can't retain information versus the 99% of kids in the class that can? What has this child done differently? How different is his upbringing that he can't, or she can't, absorb that information, but other people can, easy peasy?
Well, that's back to the nature and nurture. We just can't pull it apart, because I can have 10 kids come into my clinics and they can have great families, everyone doing everything the right way, and children can still be struggling, which is why we have to get rid of all the predispositions and prejudgments about what this is. We have to let all of that go. None of that matters in the long run. When we've got a child who's struggling, if we can figure out what the struggle is, we can identify those pathways that aren't strong enough. To me, it doesn't matter why we got here. What matters is what can we do about it to move it forward. And the why, we can't answer. There's not going to be a way at this time in our world to pull that apart and to say this. And parents are not to blame for this. This is something that's simply occurring within the family. It's not anything anyone set out to do. It just isn't. It's just simply the way things are right now for a lot of children and a lot of adults. So a lot of adults have undiagnosed ADHD. I don't care too much about the labels. It doesn't really help me a whole lot. It doesn't help me help someone to have the labels. They'll say, "Do I need a diagnosis to come in?" And I'll say, "Absolutely not. We're simply going to figure out where you are and where you want to go and see if we can help you accomplish that."
So you specialize in ADHD. Do you reckon you could do the same, get the same outcome with people, say, with Tourette's, dyslexia, OCD, autism, Asperger's? Is it very similar with the whole brain thing?
We've worked with people with all of those conditions.
Hmm.
And so it's a brain processing. And again, we're still going to look at whether or not there are auditory and visual processing problems underneath all of that. 8 out of 9, 10 people who come in have the auditory and visual processing that's going on. With anxiety, we'll use anxiety protocol. We've had children come in diagnosed with Tourette's that it does seem to resolve. Whether the diagnosis is accurate or not is not for me to determine. It's simply, where are we today and what are we going to do to go forward? Children get diagnosed with all kinds of conditions. Oppositional defiant disorder, intermittent explosive disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder. The list just goes on and on. And the trouble is, those diagnoses don't necessarily lead to a result that the parents are wanting, which is that this child isn't living with that condition anymore. And so that's the key. If we can help get rid of the symptoms, regardless of what the label is for why they walk in the door, you know, what are we focused on? And that's really my work, is let's focus on where we are. Let's focus on what this is, but we can see for right now and see if we can do something to help this child or this adult have a better life. And that's all we're after.
So the story of the Tourette's person, obviously he was twitching and swearing, whatever. What things did you get that person to do which resulted in their symptoms getting less?
Well, what we did was just the neurofeedback. And so we used the training plan. We identified auditory and visual processing problems that this person also had. We worked with the anxiety state of the brain that was a little bit elevated for this particular person. And so we helped calm that part of the brain down, which is typically tied some to the amygdala system. You know, and again, it's not giving a hardcore diagnosis in any of this. It's just looking at, okay, what are these symptoms that we're seeing? What are the behaviors? What do they lead us to consider in the way of what kind of training plan might work well to help resolve some of these symptoms or behaviors that this person is experiencing? And when they go away and they stay away, then we consider that we really have found the key for that person. You know, whether it translates to the next person, each person's unique. And so we work with each person individualized in figuring out what's going on and seeing if we can help in some way.
So there was a core relation between somebody with Tourette's and anxiety, because I remember I was always anxious to put my hand up in the class, my heart would pound. So you're saying that anxiety was a massive factor in Tourette's symptoms?
I'm saying for this particular person, when we took the approach that it could be an anxiety response pattern, this child was under a lot of duress. There was a lot of pressure. There was a lot of behaviors that weren't functional for this child. So there's a lot of stress in the family. There was a lot of stress in the classroom with these behaviors and the interventions that weren't working. And so from a standpoint of, you know, how is this impacting someone, it's very likely that there was some anxiety in there that was really being kind of stimulated because of the pressure and the stressors that were there. And so by taking the approach of helping this child really kind of retool that, kind of helping calm that down, well, we were tackling what may have been the bigger factor, which were these auditory and visual processing problems that were prohibiting this child from being able to really understand his world. And so if you can't really understand your world and everyone's expecting you to be able to, and all the pressure is there for you to perform, then that becomes a pressure cooker for a child. And so that's very stressful. So if we tackle those underlying causal factors again, whether or not he had Tourette's, I can't really say. I'm not a medical doctor. That wasn't my diagnostic forte. So I wasn't going to say we cured it. What I'm saying is the symptoms went away. So whether he actually had it or not, I don't know. I can't speak to that. All I can speak to is that once we found these auditory and visual processing problems, we worked with the anxiety a little bit with him, helping calm that part of the brain down. We get the auditory and visual processing working. He's better able to understand, communicate with people, comprehend. He was brilliant. He was a genius, but he couldn't demonstrate any of it. So once we get everything kind of lined up, then what we see is a decrease in some of these other symptoms. So is it all interrelated? I'm not the neuroscientist to measure whether it's all interrelated. I'm looking at the results. What are the results? And the results are those Tourette-like syndrome, again, symptoms went away. They stopped. And so what was that? Well, we don't necessarily know, but we can say that it isn't there now. And so that's the beauty of this, is it isn't there now.
Well, I've got last minute. That story is actually very similar to my story. Yeah, that's very interesting, that last bit. Yeah, anything you want to promote or plug before we end it, or anything you want to end on topic with?
Well, sure. I mean, people can go to my website, which is www.connie, C-O-N-N-I-E, McReynolds, McReynolds.com. And on there, you can get a copy of my book, which is on Amazon, but you can also contact me if you have more questions or you'd like a consult. I do 15, 20 minute free consults for people. I attempt to do those over the phone because I think it's easier than trying to do that through email and answer people's questions. And if I can be of help to people, that's why we're here. That's what it's all about.
Can you do these like things online, like the
I have the capability of providing these services in a remote format so that people can access the same level of service that they're able to access within my clinic. I don't do diagnosis. So we're just simply going to figure out kind of what the processing is. And if we can help with that and improve it, that's what we're about. I don't get into a lot of the diagnostic criteria stuff. So.
All right. Well,
I'm happy to help if we can.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming on and I appreciate that wisdom. I've learned a lot from that. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me on. Have a nice day.
All right. You too. Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye.